What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
This is Morningstar Galley with Law and Disorder. On with us this morning is Taria Smith. Taria, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, my name is Taria Smith. I'm a tribal member from the Torres Martinez Desert Kaweah Indians, and I am the director of the Heyday Berkeley Roundhouse, which is the California Native Publishing and the California Native Publishing Program with Heyday Books. We produce about 2 to 4 books focusing on California Native people every year, as well as a quarterly magazine called News from Native California.
And News from Native California has been a cornerstone publication for over 30 years. How is it that you became the editor and director of Heyday's Berkeley Roundhouse program?
Well, okay. Let's see, about, I want to say 12 or 13 years ago or so, I used to work in television at a television station in Southern California. And while I was there, we were given an assignment over at San Bernardino Valley College campus. And it was a storytelling event. And Malcolm Margolin, who was our founding publisher, was there. I met him. We became very good friends. He was a very warm and kind person. He knows like everybody and as far as California Native people go. And I met the director of the Roundhouse at the time, who was a woman by the name of Lindsay Bear. And we became good friends. And I became very involved with News from Native California as a contributing editor for the magazine. So kind of I was on the contributing editorial board. I absolutely loved the idea that there was a publication that was focused specifically on California Native people. And she let me know that she was going to be leaving about a year ahead of her departure, and said that she thought it would be good for me to apply. So I did. And I've got the job, and I've been there. This August will be my 10th year with Heyday.
That's amazing. As a member of the Torres Martinez Desert Kaweah Indians, how has your identity influenced your work as a journalist and editor?
Well, I think that, well, in my experience as a journalist, I used to work in mainstream media for years at a paper in Palm Springs. And I noticed a lot of times that when people would report on tribal people that were non-Native people, they would interpret things that weren't happening. And I felt like that it was important to be able to, I felt like because things were misinterpreted a lot of times and a rapport and relationship wasn't established between reporters and tribal people a lot of times, that that it was important for me to try to do that, to try to fill in the gap and everything like that. It wasn't possible for me at the time, at that particular time, to do that in mainstream when I was working there. To be completely frank, mainstream, I found the mainstream newspapers that I was familiar with were very old guard, very white, and there was a certain audience in mind that wanted to know particular things about tribal people. And if it fell outside of that, those lines, then there wasn't really much interest. So I'm grateful that I'm able to work for a tribal publication where we feature real stories with real people real tribal people, rather. I mean, it's an inside out rather than an outside in approach to journalism and to writing. And I feel really, really fulfilled in the position and very privileged to be able to do the work that I'm doing.
Taria, you edited and published Know We Are Here, Voices of Native California Resistance. How does this project align with the vision or purpose of News from Native California?
Well, a lot of the essays that come from No We Are Here came out of News from Native California. So we wanted for a very, very long time to try to figure out how to do a collection from works over the years in a book. And it just wasn't coming together as like a complete overview or, you know, a year-to-year anthology, at least on the book publishing side. So we thought about, you know, I love working for Heyday. We have plenty of very, very smart people that work there. And I suggested the idea of maybe we could do a book focusing on resistance from the magazine and also from our titles, from our Roundhouse titles. And it came together really, really well. There's a lot of really brilliant essays in the book from scholars, from elders, from cultural teachers, people like Deborah Miranda, Ursula Pike, who wrote An Indian Among Los Indígenas, an historian and scientist or engineer, Michael Connolly Misquish, who's from Campo, East Kumeyaay, and a bunch of other really, really good essays from people who were students, what their experience was like in academia. It's a reflection of what we do in the magazine, but concentrated on resistance. And I'm really, really proud of it.
Tria, you are also a graduate of UC Berkeley's School of Journalism. How did that help to shape your career and the evolution of News from Native California over the last 10 years?
My experience at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism was the most alienating experience of my life. It was tough. It was tough. I was the only Native American in my cohort. And I remember a couple of weeks or so into the program, there was an instructor. He was a television instructor who said that he had been told when he was going, you know, when he was a young reporter, not to interview toothless people or Native Americans. And it was just, I mean, it was shocking. And from then on, from that point on, I kept feeling like, okay, I'm really going to have to fight along the way to, I mean, I had abandoned the desire for a sense of belonging at that time. And I just thought, okay, I have to fight through to get to the end. It was really, really tough. A lot was expected of us. I was a single mom with two little kids, and it was like, we do not care. Get this job done. You know, they have a reputation to uphold and everything like that. But I will admit, once I was chewed up and spit out the other end, I was ready. I was ready for everything that was to come to me as a professional. And that's the truth. So I'm grateful that I had the experience. And I saw the need. I think that the decision to go to graduate school was good for me, was the best decision I could have ever made in my professional career, because it really did help advance me as a reporter. You know, you really can think you're something special until you get around people that, you know, maybe have a different set of pedigree as I did. I remember coming, I did undergrad at Humboldt State. And then, so I was at a state university. I love Humboldt State. I loved my education there, I should say. But, you know, and it was surrounded by Native people up there. You know, the biggest tribe in population, and also the biggest reservation is not too far away from campus there. But coming to Berkeley was a different type of experience. But it's like, I wanted to be, make sure that I think that the decision to go into Berkeley was a good one, because I felt like, okay, now I'm at the top of the game, I guess, if you'll say. So that's my overview. I could go on and on about that, but that's my general experience of what it was like at Berkeley. It was tough, but when I got out, I was ready.
And what role do you see news from Native California playing in amplifying California Indian voices, both within California and beyond, as it builds on its 30-year plus history?
Sometimes, or frequently, I forget what a big deal it is to be on the cover of a magazine. And I am grateful for the opportunity to be able to give California Native people who are so deserving, who would otherwise not have the opportunity to be on the cover of a magazine. Every time a new issue of the magazine is released, there's this excitement from people in whoever's on the cover. Their families are super engaged, their tribal people and their friends, and everyone is just super excited to see them. And it's something that we as California Native people need, because we do have an issue with visibility. A lot of people don't see California as being, quote, Indian country. They see Indian country as being somewhere, you know, in the Great Plains and everything like that. A lot of that has to do with Pan-Indianism and a lot of other issues like that, which in its intent was well intended, but it's hard for people to be invisible in their own homelands. And California is home to more tribal nations than any other state in the country. We're very distinct and culturally diverse in our tribal people here. And I like the opportunity to be able to share. I love the opportunity to be able to share California, the beauty, the struggles, the issues, everything that goes on with us. I like that people have a place to be able to learn. And I'm proud of the fact that after, more than 30 years, we're the only ones who do it. Yet there's tribal magazines that focus specifically on, tribal groups like, Hami Nat magazine out of San Manuel, or Aguascalientes, Mia Huen, who focus on their tribal groups. But I'm super, super happy that we have a publication that's been decades long standing and highlighting the First Peoples of California. And it's exciting and wonderful work.
And can you share any memorable feedback or moments that illustrate the impact of the magazine on its readers and tribal communities?
There's one adorable story that I love. I really love young people. So every time we get to feature young people in the magazine, I love the idea that it's doing away with the narrative that, our cultures are dying and everything like that. because, if you see young people practicing, that means that it's going to continue on. That's not completely my idea. I remember Stan Rodriguez, the Kumeyaay, a language teacher, saying that about language, that what matters most is of how many young people speak the language rather than how many older people speak the language. And so, and I agree with that as far as cultural revitalization too, how many young people are involved. So we had the opportunity to have Colleen Sisk of the Winnemem Wintu, her little son, on the cover of the magazine, and he looked very adorable and was holding a salmon. And I remember her saying to me at one of the California Indian conferences, I believe it was in Sonoma, she said that that she was doing an interview, which she does a lot of. And so she was at her home and she was doing an interview, and the little boy was watching her being interviewed. And then he ran off and grabbed a copy of the magazine with the one with him on the cover. And he showed the person who was interviewing Colleen, he showed her and said, I'm really important too. And so it really warmed my heart and made me feel good about the work that we're doing, especially concerning young people and them being very proud of who they are and their heritage and stuff. So that's a story that I think of quite often.
And that's little Netchi, and he is very important in the salmon revitalization on the McLeod River. What are some of the challenges that you have faced as the editor of a publication that's dedicated to California Indian peoples?
Oh, it's actually kind of heartbreaking to me. The problem that I've run into is, but it's also something that reminds me that I'll always have a job. So a lot of people, they just don't see us for whatever reason. But what hurts me the most is when there are other Native people that don't see us, people that may have come to California during the relocation era and haven't really had the opportunity to engage with our communities. I had a guy write in one time, he messaged the magazine on social media, and he said, "Where did all you California Indians pop up from? I've lived in California my whole life and I've never seen any of you guys. And, how did you guys all get federal recognition and everything like that?" And so I wrote back and I said, "You know, we've always been here, whether you saw us struggling or not. And, we've had reservations just like everybody else, you know, since the 1800s and everything. But I would really like the opportunity to send you a copy of the magazine so you can learn a little bit more about tribal people here in California." And so he gave me his mailing address and I did. But it's so good to be that we have the magazine for those reasons. But that's the part that I find being the most challenging. I also tell this story often. This was frustrating. I remember during one of our anniversary celebrations, we had it at the Autry in Los Angeles. And since it was at a public place, there were people walking in and out and stuff. And so we had our bird singers from down in the South who were singing. And after the event was over, this young man from the public, he came up to me and he said, "You guys are Indians, right?" And I said, "Yeah, that's right." And he said, "Well, why aren't you guys playing with drums?" And I said, "Well, because that's not what we do here. And, you know, this isn't what our tribal people do. We're bird singers, so we sing with rattles." And I was explaining to him that depending on where you are, people play with different instruments. There's people that play with clapper sticks and different type of instruments such as that. And I couldn't get it through to him. He kept insisting that Indians play drums. And I couldn't get it through to him that there were different types of Native people that had different type of practices, cultural practices. And I just could not, no matter what I said, no matter how many examples I gave to him, it just wasn't connecting because there's this idea and he had this idea in his head about what an Indian is. So I finally told him, you know, maybe you should go talk to one of the singers. And of course our singers down South are men. So, you know, go talk to one of the guys, you know, something like that. I ended up telling him, but those are some of the challenges that I trying to break through the lack of knowledge, the ignorance that people have about California tribal people.
Tria, the last time that I saw you was during the Peace and Dignity run over at Ya Ke Ama, and you were a part of a writing cohort with Christina Castro and Sarah Olson. Can you share a bit about your experience there and three of you as powerful Native women writing together?
You know, it was good to see you there. And I've been witnessing the peace and dignity journey since I was about in high school when they used to come through our reservation in Torres Martinez. What a wonderful experience. What a powerful journey and an amazing way to be able to see your lands, you know, here in North and Central America, and then the people that come from across the continent of South America to meet them in Central America. It's a powerful and wonderful thing. But yeah, over the summertime, I was a part of Mesa Refuge, a writing retreat with Sarah Calvosa Olson, who was the author of Chimi Nuam, which is a Native food ways book. that we published in the Heyday Berkeley Roundhouse, and Christina Castro, who I was meeting for the first time. I just saw her last weekend at the Pechanga Powwow down south here. And it was a wonderful experience. I describe it as the best summer of my life. It was, we were so different from one another, but we knew a lot of the same people. We were able to share so much. It was a very, very special experience and a creation of lifelong friendships between the three of us as Native women. I am very grateful for that opportunity.
And we have been speaking with Taria Smith, a tribal member of the Torres Martinez Desert Cahuilla Indians. She serves as director of Heyday's Berkeley Roundhouse program and editor of News from Native California magazine, a quarterly magazine devoted to the vibrant cultures, art, languages, history, social justice movements, and stories of California's diverse Indian peoples. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Morningstar. I appreciate this opportunity.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world for all of us to thrive in. That's it for this episode, fam. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programming is funded exclusively by listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. Remember, we all we got.